Welcome to the Kew Gardens Festival of Cinema interview series. I'm your host, John Fallon, of the Indie Film NYC podcast. I'm joined today with my co-host, Craig.
Thank you, John. We're coming to you from Ateez Organic Coffee and Tea Cafe on Metropolitan Avenue in Kew Gardens, and we're talking with one of our filmmakers.
My name is Brett Meyer. I did a documentary feature called Lost and Found, Road to Our Fathers. It was like a seven-year trip to make it, pretty much a journey and so forth. And it started out real simple. I was going to go meet my biological father, and I wasn't going to film it or do anything like that. I just thought that was kind of cliche in my point of view because, I'd seen it done and so forth, and I realized two of my best friends lost their fathers. They were both killed in accidents, so I thought, wait, now I got a juxtaposed story. You know, I'll take these guys with me to meet my dad as they talk about what it's like to lose a father. And so it took them. We got out on the journey and start rolling out there, and it's going to be like a two-week thing shooting. It's for a fun little, documentation. I mean, I work in the business in L.A., and I'm a camera operator and TV shows, and my other friend does the exact same thing, so he's a shooter. So we had the right cameras and stuff. We thought we'll do it for fun. And so we get out there, and we start filming him, and we start learning a lot about him and learning about myself because I wasn't until 33 I met him. And so there's some beautiful things. He was pretty wild. He met my biological mother, which I didn't know until about 10 years ago as well. And she finally put me in contact with him. He was off the grid. Cowboy hat. He doesn't pay taxes, doesn't do anything. You know, he's a pretty crazy cat. So I go and meet him, and he had a really rough life. And, you know, in the film, you know, once you get into Act Two, you get to see me with him, but you start to develop the issues that he got him where he was, you know, to kind of a loner type dude. And I mean, met my mom hitchhiking. He was hitchhiking with a guitar, and she picked him up, and they fell in love, traveled all over. I was the only child they could have, and they gave me up for adoption at 6 weeks. But, you learn that pretty quick in the film, and then you start to learn about my friend's dads, and then you start to see kind of the rougher times of my dad, and then it flips and it goes to show the rougher times of my dad, or I'm sorry, me, because we have real similar stuff. He was a heroin junkie and so forth, and I was an addict for a lot of my life and lost a lot of people, and he lost my mother because of drugs. She left him, and my ex-girlfriend leaves me. So you start to see all these similarities and those coming up and just identical things, you know, dealing with. And then it lets me reflect on myself, like, where do I want to go, you know, in my life? And I guess that's part of the turnaround and so forth.
So at what point were you guys putting, you know, you said you started this out, it was more just for yourselves to shoot. At what point did you realize you had something that you wanted to put together, to put out into the world?
Well, we came back after the two-week trip, had some footage, looked at it. You know, I thought I'd get around to it eventually. You know, we had such amazing footage of my dad. And then 6 months later, I get a call saying he has hepatitis C. He's on fourth stage of liver failure, and he's going to die shortly. Mm-hmm. So then we gathered the cameras up and cruised back out there to continue filming. And then we thought, wow, there's a lot going on here now. It's not just a two-week thing. This is now his life. We've documented it, and now we're going to document the very last, and this man's going to die. You know, it's over. So we got there, and it was really tough. He gave me advice of, you know, what to be in life, and talk about his mistakes, and don't make the same mistakes he did, and that I can do better, and I have wonderful friends. And the thing is, everybody falls in love with this man on camera because he's the wisdom guy, and he doesn't hide behind anything. He doesn't have any bullshit, and you always fall in love with him because he's who he is. And when you get out there, he says, you know, the doctor could have stopped it in phase one of liver failure, but he didn't. He's like, I want to ride it out. I don't want to fix it because I came into this world and I became a junkie, and I lived a hard, rough life, and I want to die that exact same way. I don't want anyone to take care of me, and this is the way I'm going to go. And I really honored that, and he speaks like that for everything in his life, you know. And he's fun, he's happy, he'll crack a joke. I mean, you see the film, he's captivates it like the grandfather, and we're just the kids around trying to figure it out, like, about each other, losing their dads, and so forth. So we went out there, and knew we had that, and then I left, and And my dad ended up passing away. And when he did, you know, we already knew we were going to do a doc, but I was sitting back looking at all the footage, you know, all the footage we had. And there was one spot where my DP said, ask him where his favorite place is. And I was like, come on, who cares about the favorite place? And he goes, Lawrence, where's your favorite place? And he goes, right there where my mama picked me up, your mama picked me up hitchhiking. It's this blue lake. It's real long. It's real blue in Michigan. And that's my favorite place. For some reason, it changed me inside. There's just something beautiful about that lake. So I saw that footage, and I called the DP, and I said, you made a huge mistake because we're going to go find this lake, dude. So I gathered the guys up again, and that took a couple years to get two grown men to come back together, and all three of us fly all the way to Michigan. And we had to go look for this lake. We never knew existed or anything. It ended up being the third most beautiful lake in the entire world according to National Geographic. It's called Torch Lake. So we drive up there, and you don't really know. You don't really know what we're going to do when we get there. And I have a canister next to me that I have in the very beginning of the film. You don't know what it is. It's something my dad made.
Right.
So you get up there, and I get out on that lake, and we have GoPros under the water, and I spend a moment, and I look out at that lake. And I open up the canister, and I spread his ashes there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the surprise. And then all three of us sit on the beach and watch the sunrise, because now I became a subject of my own film. I've joined my friends in something we never thought would happen.
Right.
I would have a lost father instead of just finding one. So.
Wow, yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of emotion that you're just telling me right now. So, I mean, I could imagine there's loss, there's resolution.
Yes, yeah.
Was there anger in the beginning? Did you feel any anger that you had never seen him before? Or
no, I never had any anger, because he talks about how him and my mom could have had a child, but he was too wild. And I understand, because I lived a life just like his. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I went through my stage of the drugs and alcohol, you know, and it's something I always have to work with. You know what I mean? I always struggle with that, you know, in my life. That's just the way it is with an addict situation. And but it made me think, and, you know, about 7 years ago, I had begun working and focusing on getting sober. And I've had, most of my life for the last 7 years, I've been quite sober. You know, there's been times I've relapsed. That's just the truth. I don't want to say that, but it's true. But I've lived 90% of my life focused on getting better. And I got that from my father. So I'm blessed. I'm not mad at him, because I saw it take him down. And I have skills to make films and a good career, travel the world. But that doesn't you fix your problems inside. And he was so close in blood to me that he let me look at inside me, you know, to help change me. So I never had any anger, more sadness, I guess, at times.
I mean, the film just seems to give so many lessons. One, finding your father and the whole journey of that, and then also to say that you had parallel lives even though you didn't know each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, for addiction, it almost, you know, verifies that it's a hereditary condition.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, even humor, you know, like, was so fun, because he's like a kid, and on his driver's license he takes a pen when you have to sign your name, and he just puts a line across because he doesn't care.
Right.
Now, when I sign my receipts at places, I just do smiley face because I don't care.
Right.
I just, you know, and just little things like that. It was really fun to be with him like that, and him just being straightforward, always loving people. Never had any pity party on camera.
Right.
Again, everyone that sees that, I hope you really enjoy him, because you know this man inside and out. And by the time he dies, you know, you don't find any anger with it. I don't feel, but.
Now, is there, you know, something you've screened this before a few places, right?
Yeah.
And so what kind of reaction are you getting from the audience? Or what do you hope your message is for them?
Well, we get a lot of people tearing up, you know, because it's heavy. I get that. I mean, that's like 80% people that teared up and learned lessons from it. And that's the whole point, is to find lessons in it. But it's a very emotional ride, and I've always been told that. And people that have seen it have just, you know, I guess it's doing its job, because there's laughs, there's cries, and quite an emotional journey. We won best feature documentary in the studio film, or Yeah, Studio City Film Festival in LA, way out that way. And just a number one, other ones were in Morocco, I think. It's going to be shown in Mexico and subtitled over. Thought that was cool. But yeah, I guess if you're asking reactions, people learn from it. I've had fathers come up to me with their kids saying, hey, you know, I'm glad you got to show these things about drugs because, you know, these guys are starting to get into things and I don't know how to talk to them about it. Now they can see firsthand of that, you know. But
because there's a moment in the film. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that film kind of helped you kick off your journey to, like, get sober, right?
Right, right.
There's a moment where you, I think you literally say, I have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And I've just gone to different programs, we say, that it was the first time consciously to make a decision on that. Because, like, it was all at the same time finishing up and he passed. And, yeah, that came in. It's not like in the movies where someone dies and you're just like, I'm going to change it. Right. You sit back and you think about it. You start to look at all the downfalls of what everything's affecting you, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the trickery, I think, with substance abuse is you can have everything and have a good family, a good career, you know, a lot of things. But you're being taken down at other times. Right. And, you know, different things with relapse and stuff for people are so detrimental. You can relapse and not come back pretty quickly at all, especially on high-end type people that are very intense. So, it was a conscious decision, and, man, life is so much better being sober. It's so fun. I can crack jokes and shit. I feel like I'm 16 again. I mean, I wouldn't even – yeah, I'm just not even the same person now, and it's so worth it, man. Oh, I love it.
How long was the kind of the post-production process? Like, I mean, was it?
Oh, you have to ask me that. I'm dropping this mic. We're out of here, man. I can't hang.
Because it must have been a bit of a catharsis to kind of get all that out finally, but it must not have been easy.
Oh, man, it was crazy. I don't know. We had so much footage, and then, you know, waiting a year to go film my dad getting sick, then come back editing that footage. Then a huge string out, but then we had to fly to Detroit too. So that was another a year and a half to get the guys together and money to go out there to do that. Then come back and edit. And I got funded from Emmanuel Fibolowski. I always do his name wrong. Okay. Prince of Naples, Italy. I want to make sure I say that. He financed the very end. He saw the clips and so forth. And he flew in from Italy. I worked with him on a thing, and he's like, asked money I needed to finish, and he gave me the money, and we did the editing and spent a year doing that this last year to get the edit. We had a long string out. It was 3.5 hours, you know, how any of this would go.
Right.
And, yeah, it was a long journey because...
Were you cutting it or did...
Yeah, I was cutting. I cut an assembly cut.
Okay.
And then I brought in another editor that was great. He was really solid, really, you know, got what I wanted. And then my favorite editors are female editors, like Martin Scorsese's, you know, Quentin Tarantino's. They're all female. And since it was an all-guy film, I wanted her to come take it. I had to beg the person to take it. You know, it was actually my ex-girlfriend in the film that you'll see that I lost due to all the drugs and stuff. She's an excellent editor. Worked with Slam Dance, so I begged her, you know, after all these years of 8 years of, you know.
Putting up with you.
Putting up with me and not seeing her getting married and have a kid. I begged her. I said, I know you have the skill to do this. So she came back in, and, of course, like all women, beat it up, find the emotional parts, the sad parts, extend things. And she had the layers of the cake to make you cry and where to open it up. And just phenomenal job. So,
yeah,
but it takes time for all those elements.
And you said at the lake you did a sunrise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a beautiful choice having it as a sunrise instead of a sunset, because it definitely is opening up the rest of your life. It's starting over again.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool you said that. Yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it. I just think of the sun, and I mean, you see all three of us sitting there, all three of us guys just looking at this thing, and yeah, it was beautiful. That's kind of cool. I like how you say that.
I mean, and especially after the fact that you spread the ashes. Somebody would have normally thought sunset end.
Yeah.
But this is a sunrise. So it really is a beginning. So it's really a wonderful way to
well, in a way, this whole film is about choices. I mean, you know, the choices we make. I mean, because the choice to go on the journey in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's a brave choice.
Right, and, yeah.
So I'm glad you could share that story with us. I mean, I know that, you know, probably going to be a few tissue boxes needed in the theater at the end of it, but it's a fun ride. I mean, he's a very interesting character, and I'm glad you could share this with us.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I wanted to comment on, it's interesting you said that, because we did spread the ashes while the sun was setting. Then when it shows us all three sitting, I think we had to do it the next day. We ran out of time, and that's when we watched the sunrise. So that, you saying that, man, you're teaching me stuff about my own film. So
great.
Well, that's beautiful. And, yeah, thanks for letting me have my film player. The festival's awesome. Way cool. Everyone's cool. Good films. Hats off to Off the Rails last night. It was epic. Wow, that was
great.
Blew me away.
That was the outdoor screening at the Queen's
Yes.
Queen,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we were really excited to bring that film in. That was one that we invited in because it's just such a...
Yeah, it was great. It was well done. It was raw.
Yep.
Plus, raw, and then they had great effects on it, you know, CGI. I don't know. It was great, cool film. I'd like to meet the director. I thought he might be there, but he wasn't there, but... Yeah, thanks for having me here and so forth. And last thing, I'm headed back to Detroit. Actually went from L.A. to Detroit and then flew back here. And now I'm flying back to Detroit again. I'm on another big documentary I started called Keep an Eye Out for Needles in the Hay. And it's about the heroin and opiate epidemic that's taking place throughout the whole country. So we're getting some crazy. Yeah, we're pretty happy about it. It's going coming along and so forth. Pretty intense, and I hope to really bring out a lot of the good things in a film or a documentary, not just about the negative side. Sure. I think the media, I think Vice TV, sorry, I'm calling you out, is all a negative, and they never go anywhere. They just leave the people. And being an addict myself, we're showing really dark areas, people losing this and that, but we're also going to areas of people that are recovering that have their own tattoo shops. They go to UFC fights. They do fun things. So you bring darkness, but you want to bring the light, and I think it takes a lot of imagination to bring light. I don't know if that makes any sense. It's easy to bitch about things. So we're going to show all ends, the dark side and the top. So Needles in the Hay, heroin and opiate epidemic, keep an eye out for that, and I'll be in touch with you guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Cool friends already.
We'll be terrific. Here next year, and if you're done in time, we can
we'll talk about that. Yeah.
But,
thank you so much.
Thanks again for being part of the inaugural year of the Kew Gardens Festival of Cinema.
It was great. Give me a hug, you guys, before we turn this shit off.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.